You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You just found the very best in original talk radio broadcasting on the internet. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want. You're listening to On the Couch, with Dr. Michelle on LA Talk Radio.
And you are on the couch with Dr. Michelle. This is the show that makes you think about how you live your life. And hopefully I can help you define what changes you want to make to create a more joyful, less stressful life for yourself. I have a great show today. First, let me ask you something. Pretty heavy question here. Is it possible to forgive people who are hateful and dangerous? How could we forgive angry murderers and terrorists who've killed people close to us? Is it possible to live in a certain state of consciousness where forgiveness can come effortlessly? I don't know about that. Pretty hard, huh? Pretty difficult to think about these questions. Well, apparently there is a way to do this and forgive. According to my guest today, Master Charles Cannon, he's author of one of the most enlightening books I have read. Indeed. It's called Forgiving the Unforgivable, The Power of Holistic Living. Now, this is the true story of how the survivors of the 2008 Mumbai terrorist attack answered hatred with compassion and forgiveness. Master Charles Cannon is a modern spiritual teacher. He's founder of the Synchronicity Foundation for Modern Spirituality. Over the past 30 years, he's developed the high-tech meditation and holistic lifestyle experience. And his work truly has helped transform lives of millions of people around the world. Let's get him on the air right now. Welcome, Master Charles. So nice to have you with me today.
Thank you, Dr. Michelle. Great to be with you.
Well, I must say, this book was clearly amazing about how you and your group traveled to Mumbai, stayed in the hotel, experienced a terrorist explosion, and survived. Well, I want to pay my respects to Kia, whose husband and daughter were killed.
Thank you.
24 of your associates from your Synchronicity Foundation for Modern Spirituality were staying there. That's the Oberoi Hotel in Mumbai, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. And you describe how it went down. And yet how you and the people who are with you worked through the feelings and issues and the thoughts to forgive these people. Can you briefly recap what happened while you were at the hotel?
Yes, of course. I was there with these 25 people from all over the world who had been with me for many years, and we were there on spiritual pilgrimage. I lived in India for 12 years, was a disciple of a very well-known Indian guru in the 1970s and early 80s, and so I'm very familiar with India. I'm a monk in the Vedic order, which is Hinduism.
Yes.
And so I'm very familiar with India and had been back and forth many times. I have many friends there, many acquaintances. So.
Yes.
These people over the years in my audience, of course, have wanted to join me. So this trip was well prepared in advance, over a year in advance, so that these few people could join me in India and I could share with them some of my experience of India over the years. So we were on spiritual pilgrimage and we were staying in the Oberoi Hotel in Mumbai. And every evening we would have our meditation program, and thereafter we would return to the hotel and have dinner and retire for the night.
Right.
So I was in my room having returned from the program, having finished my dinner, when we heard what sounded like to us fireworks, you know?
Yes.
And so one of the people who was with me in my room, Steve Ross, who is a yoga teacher from Los Angeles, and a longtime friend, went out of the room and down the hallway and looked over the atrium. This hotel had an open atrium that went up like 25 stories, right?
Uh-huh.
But you could look over at any, on any floor down into the lobby. So he looked over, and of course he came running back and said, there are two, I saw two men with AK-47s mowing people down in the lobby.
Wow.
Well, that alerted us right away.
Yes.
This wasn't an Indian wedding with fireworks, you know. So we got very attentive. But as soon as he said that, the first of the explosions happened, the grenades, the bombs.
Oh, man.
And before we knew it, it escalated very quickly because what happened was the terrorist moved through the lobby and the restaurant of the lobby, killing everybody they encountered. And then they moved up to the next floor, which was another restaurant, and they went in there and bombed it and set it on fire. Well, that restaurant was two floors below my room. Above my room was two floors above it.
Right.
So at that point, the whole hotel and our room started filling with smoke, so thick you couldn't see within a foot in front of you. And we could see flames leaping up the side of the building if we looked out the window. But their windows were not openable. They were sealed, very thick glassed windows. So we had to quickly get focused and break the window so we could breathe, right?
Right.
So we did that and took a turn sticking our heads out the window to breathe. And then slowly the fire brigade came and we could see them putting out the fire, and the smoke began to clear from the rooms as the filtration system kept working. But then it just kept escalating. Every few minutes was another explosion and gunfire, and this went on for 45 hours.
Wow.
And we were, in a sense, held captive in that room.
Yes.
We did receive guidance from outside, from our people on the outside who were in touch with the police and the army and everybody else that was involved, and the hotel management, who was advising us what to do, which was to barricade the door, shut out all the lights, and pretty much play dead, you know?
Yes.
Because you never knew in the next moment if the door of the room was going to be blown open, and that was your last moment.
Yes.
So we spent 45 hours like that, and again, every few minutes, another bomb, more gunfire, until the Army commandos came in and killed these two terrorists who had by then gone to the 18th floor of the hotel and taken several people hostage and killed them and were holed up there. And they were volleying back and forth from the 18th floor down to the lobby where the commandos were. But eventually they killed them, and then they secured the building and then rescued each of us, room by room by room, and brought us out.
Thank goodness.
But in the process, of course, two of my long-term associates, a man named Alan Scher, who was very dear to me and very involved in Synchronicity Foundation for Modern Spirituality, and his 13-year-old daughter were killed in that restaurant.
Mm.
And four others who were at the same table with them in that restaurant were seriously wounded.
Yes.
So in the aftermath, we had to deal with not only our own trauma, but also the death of two people very close to us and four people in critical condition in the hospital.
My goodness. And I'm sure you were thinking at the time, who is downstairs? Who's downstairs? Where did everyone go? You know,
yeah.
I'm sure you were trying to track the last time you left everyone downstairs.
Yes,
and
luckily we had some intercom telephone between from room to room,
yes.
So we could talk room to room with a few people, and then others were able to piece it together with our people on the outside. So by the, I would say, into the second day, we knew that Alan and Naomi were unaccounted for, and we had reports from those in the hospital that they were pretty sure that they had been killed.
Oh, boy.
So you had to deal with all of that in the midst of not knowing in the next moment if you were going to be the same. You know?
Sure, exactly. By the way, if you just tuned in here to LA Talk Radio, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle, as you always are this time, Friday, 11 Pacific Standard Time in the morning. And my guest today is Master Charles Cannon. He is the author of a most enlightening book, really a wonderful book. It's called Forgiving the Unforgivable, The Power of Holistic Living. This is the true story of how the survivors of the 2008 Mumbai terrorist attack answered hatred with compassion and forgiveness. And also, along with your teachings within the book of how you accomplished that, Master, it seems like there's a lot of other stories told by the survivors. They interweave their perceptions and their teachings and how horrifying it must have been. But all the while, they stay rather focused on, you know, the mind and helping and lifting up the spirits of everyone else, too. So it's amazing. You know, you explain that your book is different from others, which tell us how to apply what we learn in daily life. What do you mean by that?
Well, most books that you read give you intellectual content, and you read it, and maybe it's a good story or has some information that you could apply, but you're not applying it while you're reading it.
Right.
You're kind of memorizing it or storing it, and maybe you will apply it later.
Right.
So we tried a different approach in this book, which is sort of the way I teach ongoingly, and that is we wanted to make it practical in the moment that you were reading it. In
right.
other words, to say, okay, here's the concept, but you can experience it right here, right now, while you're reading it.
Right.
While we're talking about it. So you probably noticed in the book, we took those opportunities and spread them through each chapter where we will actually ask people to stop, to pause,
yes.
to breathe, to be aware, and to experience the reality that we were talking about. And in this way, your concept becomes experience.
Right.
And I think that's most important. Otherwise, what do we have but just intellectual enlightenment? You know,
yes.
something we've memorized, and that's very particular to people in the West, especially. We've been educated that
sure.
if we know something, if we understand it, that we have experienced it, and that's not necessarily true. In the East, they will always say to you, "Experience first, concept second." Like when I was with my teacher in India for those 12 years, and many of us arrived in the early 70s with our college degrees and wanted to study what he had to teach.
Right.
And we wanted access to the library, of course, to get books, information. And he locked the library.
Uh-oh.
And when we asked why, he said, "Experience first, concept second. First experience, share your experience with me, and then I'll tell you what book to read that will support that experience, that will assist you to understand it and to make the experience more practical and tangible in your life." And I think that's a really important principle today, especially in the information age where everything moves so fast.
Yes.
We rarely take the time to really experience what we think.
Right.
And I just think that's very important. So that's why you find this book presented in this way.
You're so right about that. It's the me generation, but it is the high-speed communications. It's so easy to get up in the morning, get on the computer, get on the cell phone, defocus on what's going on within, and continually put it out there and, you know, not breathe, not think about the moment, not embrace the still, and really capture what's going on within you, and then proceed with what you need to do slowly, but taking moments out to go within and just experience the now, which is all we have, really.
Exactly. And that whole process I call wakefulness.
Yes.
How wakeful are you within the experience of your life, moment to moment? Because in truth, the only experience of life we ever have is here and now.
Yes.
The only reality we ever experience is here and now, and how present to it are we?
Yes.
If we're present to it, life fully lived, wakefully lived, in the now of its happening, is radically fulfilling.
Yes.
But if we are not present and we're lost in the habitual regurgitation of the mind and our thoughts and beliefs, mm-hmm. we miss life.
Yes.
And in that sense, we're not fully alive, and therefore we're not really fulfilled as human beings.
Right, exactly. And I think so much in Western culture, we always think about the future. What's going to happen next? How are we going to achieve this? It's all about getting to the next step, and I'm not putting that down necessarily, but there's always a forward thought as to what's going to be happening. You know, what do I have to do today and the end of the day and the end of the month? What do I have to achieve? And that energy is all about, again, it's not in the moment necessarily. It's not embracing that. It's about out there and what can I accomplish? And then there's seemingly an emptiness to, you never get there unless you're aware of the present of where you've gotten to. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly so.
Yeah.
Again, in truth, we are here and it is now.
Yes.
So we could take that same approach that we take in the book right here, right now. We can invite people who are listening in this moment to just pause for a moment.
Yes.
And just be present with us and be wakeful in the moment of life happening and explore that experience. For example, you hear our words, and yet there are spaces between the words.
Yes.
Without the spaces, the words don't make any sense because they'd all run together.
Yes.
But we often get so focused on the words, we miss the spaces. And without those spaces, we lose our balance, the balance between emptiness and fullness, between words and spaces. And that balance is really important because wakefulness is based on or is proportional to balance.
Yes.
So really, wakefulness is just slowing down a little bit and taking those pauses and being really present to the life experience that is happening here and now. And when you do, you notice a shift in your perception of reality. You become,
yes,
of course, more peaceful and more relaxed, but you also notice that life is much more vivid, life is much more alive, and that there is an innate joy in life truthfully lived, that if you move too fast, you miss it.
That's so true. By the way, if you just tuned in, folks, you're on LA Talk Radio with Dr. Michelle. That's me. And you're on the couch, as you always are at this time. And my guest today is Master Charles Cannon. He's the author of the book Forgiving the Unforgivable, The Power of Holistic Feeling. Again, this is the true story of how the survivors of the 2008 Mumbai terrorist attack answered hatred with compassion and forgiveness. And I would like to chat about that. After the SWAT teams came in to help you, the survivors of your group made surprising statements to the international media. I remember when that was on the news, using words of forgiveness to express compassion and understanding toward their attackers. How could they do this, Master Charles?
They could do it because they had lived this way for many, many years. Yes. Ordinary people did extraordinary things with practice. So for many years of living what I call the holistic lifestyle, which is a lifestyle based on balance and wakefulness, they were able to remain whole within their experience through that terrorist attack. And they were able to remain present rather than surrendering to their adrenaline, to their their feelings, to their fear, to their emotions, to their mind that was hyper alert and,
yes.
and looking for information with which to survive, they were able to remain present and stay true to their lifestyle practice. So they were centered. And when you are centered, you're not lost in the mind and your feelings, and the creative insights of your own consciousness present themselves pertinent to the situation that's happening.
Right.
So you get the information that you need to be able to deal with, navigate the situation that is happening. So each of them was able to demonstrate that within a very extraordinary experience. So afterward, they were just being themselves when they were compassionate and forgiving. And as you said, the media was a bit stunned by us of being forgiving and compassionate to terrorists who had just killed the members of our group and seriously injured others. And yet, I said to them, as I would say now, what's important is, who do you choose to be in any given moment? Everybody's experience is valid. I can't understand why a terrorist is the way he is. That's his conditioning. That's his enculturation. That's his experience, and he's entitled to that. And he places me at choice. He presents that experience to me, which is fear, hatred, violence.
Yes.
And he presents it to me, but then I'm a choice. If I'm wakeful, I can say, okay, I honor that experience as appropriate for you. I don't understand it. But what's important is, who do I choose to be in relation to it? I can choose the same thing. I can choose hatred.
Yes.
I can choose violence. I can choose anger. I can choose revenge. And if I do, the terrorist wins, because I just chose his experience and made it my own.
Right.
But rather, I could say, no, I'm not going to choose that. It's all right for you. It's your experience. But who I choose to be is loving.
Yes.
Compassionate. Forgiving. And that's what I'm going to fill myself with, and that's the contribution I'm going to make to our world.
Mm-hmm. No.
And when I could explain it in that way, of course, all the media people got it.
Sure.
And that message then went out to thousands and thousands of people all around the world, and back from those people came thousands of messages saying, you have inspired us.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get to be the way you are, and how can we learn to participate? How can we learn to be the same? So this book is really written in response to all those beautiful people all over the world who want to rise to that level of truthful experience in themselves.
Yes.
And it is possible.
I think there are a lot of people out there who, you know, had relatives, let's just say, in the 9/11 attacks, and they haven't quite gotten there yet. They don't get it. Of course, who would? It was such a devastating, horrific terrorist attack on our country, on the souls of so many people. How would you reconcile that for others? How would you suggest that people work through the pain and the suffering from that?
Well, I always go back to a quote from the Buddha, and you're, of course, a very well-educated psychologist and understand this principle. And the quote is, holding on to anger is like grasping a hot coal with the intent of throwing it at someone else, but you are the one who gets burned.
Yes. Yes.
So this could be applied to forgiveness, being unforgiving, like grasping, holding on to that hot coal. You're the one who is getting burned. You have to find the way to let that coal go.
Yes.
And
yes.
if you do, you release it. And when you release it, you're free.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, again, who are you choosing to be? Because who you choose to be you fill yourself with that experience. And if you're unforgiving and hateful and wanting revenge and full of the negation of life, then that's the experience you have.
Yes.
And
yes.
Your life is full of suffering based on that choice. So I think we always have to go back to being responsible creators mm-hmm. of our experience,
yes.
which is to say, we create our reality through our choices.
Right.
So who are we choosing to be? Mm-hmm. And if we are responsible, we can choose truthfully. We can choose lovingly, compassionately, and forgivingly, and we can fill ourselves with that experience.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I think another great principle is that the world is a great mirror.
Yes.
It always reflects back to you what you are. So if you are loving, if you are friendly, if you are helpful, the world will prove loving and friendly to you.
Mm-hmm.
It's again, who do we choose to be?
Yes.
And that's the contribution that we make to our world. You know, there's so many people come to greet me because I am a spiritual teacher, and when people come, they always want to bring you some kind of a gift.
Sure.
And what I say to people is, don't bring me gifts, you know, little trinkets and things. Mm-hmm. Rather, give me the gift of your authentic being.
Yes.
Make mm-hmm. that your contribution to our world.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's the greatest gift you can give, not only to yourself, but to me and to everyone in this world.
Yeah. Well, you are an amazing light to the world. And by the way, if you just tuned in, folks, you're on the couch here with Dr. Michelle. And I'm speaking with Master Charles Cannon. He's the author of an incredible book. It's called Forgiving the Unforgivable, The Power of Holistic Living. It is the true story of how the survivors of the 2008 Mumbai terrorist attack answered hatred with compassion and forgiveness. And it not only sort of teaches you how to get there to that place, but also weaves in the thought processes and stories of some of the other individuals who were with Master Charles during that explosion and how they coped with it and came out with a positive experience, and also really help to the world in looking at this tragedy with compassion and understanding. So I want to know, Master Charles, how you experience consciousness, because it's so different from others who we deal with every day, how you think and live. You talk about your daily experience of having blissful consciousness without thought. You talk about seeing sometimes individuals as vibrating light particles. Boy, I'll tell you, the people who call me and are angry on the air, or some of my clients who I work with who are in pain as I see them, but really nasty and angry, it's hard to see them as vibrating light particles for me sometimes. How do you do that?
My experience, of course, is based on years of living the holistic lifestyle, which features meditation, daily meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been an ardent meditator all of my life. And the result of that is the result of meditation. What is meditation? Meditation mm-hmm. is a balancing technique. And since we live in a relative reality and all experience is relative, there are two polarities.
Mm-hmm.
There's the interior of our experience and the exterior. There's the positive and the negative.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, the exterior dominates the interior. We are objectively focused to the extreme. It's the default polarity.
Right.
So in order to create balance, we have to emphasize the opposite polarity.
Mm-hmm.
And the opposite polarity is the interior. So when you meditate, you close your eyes, and where does your focus go? Inside,
right.
To the interior.
Mm-hmm.
And you create relative balance. When you do so, your awareness expands,
mm-hmm.
and your awareness becomes progressively more holistic. And that means that you are able to perceive your reality in a holistic way. And what does that mean? holistic reality has been defined in the great wisdom traditions and the holistic models of reality for 8 to 10,000 years in recorded human history, and they all say the same thing, that life in essence is one. There is a ground of being, a substratum, an essence we all share, and it's called by many names. You could call it source, you could call it consciousness, you could call it life.
Right.
We all share that life. And when your awareness expands through balance and your awareness becomes holistic, you experience that oneness.
Mm-hmm.
You perceive that one consciousness that is all and everything.
Yes.
Then every object you see is vibrating with the same life that you are vibrating.
Mm-hmm.
And you see and you experience the oneness of all and everything. There is no separation in truth. There is no difference. Everything in essence is the same life, the same consciousness, and we all share it.
Mm-hmm.
And the true nature of that essence, that life, that consciousness, is a delighting energy, a self-delighting energy. It is happy for no reason.
Mm. Yes.
And when you experience holistic reality, that's what you experience. You are just blissful.
Mm-hmm.
You're just happy for no reason. Everything is delighting in its existence.
Yes.
And that bliss fills you. And that's the stories you've heard of, of all the great mystics and all the great sages of human history. They have described that euphoria and that joy of life, that radical bliss. And that's the state of being that I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
That's the state of being that was modeled to me with my teacher. And after many, many years of practice, that's the experience of life that I now enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And it validates all those wisdom traditions and all those sages and mystics and masters.
Yes.
And it says, it's attainable.
Yes.
It is possible, and anybody can experience it. It's just based on the principle of balance. So if you understand the mechanics of life and you apply them, you can experience holistic life or true reality as blissful consciousness.
Mm. That's really a heavy concept, and a lot of people are saying, how can I get there? How can I get there? But, you know, as you said, it's age-old mechanics, which makes me think of some of the so-called new quantum physics theories that a lot of people are talking about. You know, this has been around for so long, a lot of people are saying, aha, I get it, quantum theory, how we apply many universes and we are all one, you know, going on at the same time, and it's about choice that we have. So what saying is actually exactly what a lot of the quantum physics spiritualists are talking about right now, basically.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's the coming full circle of science and mysticism.
Mm-hmm.
No?
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of it. Now with our science that is able to perceive more subtly, as in quantum science, we get to that essence, and we are able to perceive that, yes, indeed, what has always been said in these mystical traditions is true. In essence, there is only one.
Right.
And we can open to that experience if we go to the subtlest dimensions of our own consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's another good point. We are multidimensional forms of life.
Mm-hmm.
We have a physical, an emotional, a mental dimension, but we also have subtle dimensions beyond the mind, the subtle, the causal, the supercausal. And meditation allows you to access and actualize those subtle dimensions. And when you do, then you have a subtle perception of reality, and you can see, as quantum science is seeing, the oneness of all and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes,
quantum science, quantum mechanics
is
totally valid, as are these great mystical traditions.
Sure. So you talk about your teachings, which include five core principles, and we just talked about there is only one, and also you talk about the true experience of reality being in the here and now. Relative reality is the arena of all experience, right? And also you describe how most humans are aware of their physical, mental, and emotional levels of experience. How do we create a thought and sustain it as an unconscious belief? You talk about that, and that's very psychological in your book, which I really appreciated. You talked about our unconscious database. So you use an example. You say the same thoughts and beliefs that we carry within us, possibly in our subconscious. You say, I am unworthy, or something's wrong with me. Messages we've been given, possibly from caregivers early on, society, anyone else, siblings, schoolmates, whatever. These messages are within us, and I work with this every day with clients. How can we break this cycle according to your concepts?
I often use the metaphor that human beings are like magicians. We use our words and our thoughts and our beliefs to create our reality, but it's a magic show. Now, a true magician doesn't believe that his magic is real. He knows that it's an illusion. But human beings are not like that. We believe our magic. So we're all enculturated and conditioned, just as you have described. We take on all these beliefs that we then believe ourselves as true. And the only reference we have for them being true is that, well, everybody else agrees that they're true, therefore we should too. And we never question them. We never question it when somebody tells us that we're ugly, or that we're too fat, or too skinny, or that we're useless or stupid. We never question it. But really, it's just a word that we have assigned a meaning to and have agreed is real when it isn't. So the first step in awakening from the illusion, awakening from the dream that we create, is to doubt, to be skeptical, to question every belief you have.
Yes.
And as you start questioning very quickly, you discover, you say, wait a minute, that's not true.
Yes.
And in that way, you are making the unconscious conscious.
Yeah.
Because all that data of all our enculturation, where is it stored?
Right.
It's stored in our database.
Right.
And various triggers in our life experience bring that data up, and we just keep automatically repeating it.
Yep.
But once we start questioning it, we get wakeful to it, and then we can disidentify from it.
Yes.
And when we do, as you know, then there is transformation.
Yes.
And as Krishnamurti used to say, transformation is through awareness, not analysis.
Right, exactly. Awareness, exactly. Now, Sigmund Freud did have something to that analysis, but you're right. It is a conscious, it's almost like the new cognitive therapy they talk about. New, it's been around forever. Cognitive behavioral therapy to disprove those untruths that we've bought into about ourselves and our lives and who we are. So
exactly so.
Yeah.
Exactly so. And that's the evolutionary process of life. I think that's another important point.
Sure.
We are all evolving forms of consciousness because consciousness, life, has but one intention, and that is to ever more fully be itself, to know itself. Well, we are the cutting edge of the evolution of consciousness as human beings.
Yes.
Consciousness wanting to grow, to be more than it has ever been. And in that process, the measurement of evolution and consciousness is self-awareness.
Right.
Why are human beings considered the superior species of this planet? Why? Because we exhibit the most self-awareness.
Yes.
And we are continually growing that self-awareness through all our experience. And the more it grows, the more it increases, the more wakeful we become, and the more truthful. Then we will look at our beliefs. And we'll say, wait a minute, I need to make my unconscious database conscious.
Yes.
I've got to get really responsible for what I think, because what I think is what I experience.
Mm.
My thinking flavors my experience of reality. So the real question then is, if you are what you think, who are you if you don't think?
Mm.
And that brings us right back to this here and now moment and those spaces between the words. You know, if we can get to that balance and just be wakeful, and if we could just suspend our thinking for a moment, what's left?
Mm-hmm.
What's left is life in its purity, a blissful, delighting, celebratory consciousness that is totally fulfilling and doesn't need any of our beliefs and stories about it.
Mm. Enlightening, difficult sometimes for many people. And if you just tuned in here to LA Talk Radio, you are on the couch with Dr. Michelle here, and my guest today is Master Charles Cannon. He's the author of one of the most enlightening books I think I've ever read, truly. It's called Forgiving the Unforgivable, The Power of Holistic Living. This is the true story. You may have heard about it on the news back in 2008. It's about the Mumbai terrorist attack on the hotel. And, you know, it's interesting because Master Charles Cannon and his group, they answered hatred with compassion and forgiveness to these terrorists who actually murdered two of their colleagues, and severely injured several others as well. In your book, Master Charles, you teach that we're all the author of our own creations, okay? How do you suggest that many people who pray to their God, whether it be Jesus, Muhammad, whoever they wish to call it, Holy Spirit, for help, how do they reconcile with the understanding that they are the source? How can you tell them that?
Mm-hmm. Good question.
Thanks.
This sort of delineates the progression in religious experience, which mirrors the evolution in individuated consciousness. There's that level of religious experience where you and your God are separate and different from each other. Mm. Your God is in heaven, you are here on earth, and you are constantly supplicating yourself to that God. You're praying to that God to help you.
Yes.
That is what is called the egocentric level of religious experience based on the illusion of separation. You have not yet reached that level of self-awareness where you can recognize the oneness of all and everything.
Mm.
But as your consciousness evolves, you move to the more trans-egocentric levels of spiritual experience in which you and your God are one. You and your God are the same consciousness.
Mm.
And in that understanding, then, you are the creator of your experience moment by moment by moment.
Yes.
And you become responsible for the creation of your experience in terms of what you think and what you believe and how you live your life based on that. Again, it's who do you choose to be?
Mm-hmm.
Now, in a truthful understanding, it's taken consciousness 14 billion years since the Big Bang to get us to where we are today, at the cutting edge of the evolution of one consciousness in self-awareness.
Yes.
If we are truthful, as Andrew Cohen says in, I think, his new book, Evolutionary Enlightenment,
yes.
If we are truthful, we recognize that we are God on the cutting edge of the experience of itself.
Right.
We are really trailblazers.
Yes.
Nobody has any idea what will happen next, where the evolution of the consciousness that we are will go next. If we are wakeful, it's such an exciting process to be on that edge and to be aware that you are a creator of life moment by moment by moment. So in that responsible excitement, what's important is who are you choosing to be?
Mm-hmm.
Are you living truthfully? Are you living lovingly? Are you life affirmative? Are you compassionate, etc.? Because you are creating the very evolution of consciousness itself.
Right. It's not necessarily looking at us as narcissists in that we know that we are God, I am, God is, that kind of thing, and we can pray to whoever we want to. We connect with those beings who are also God, sons of God.
Exactly. So, well put.
Mm-hmm. Thank
well
you.
Put. Exactly. Okay. So if all and everything is the same consciousness, then any great master, any great teacher, any great founder of a religion mm-hmm. is the same consciousness that we are.
Yes.
And we can invoke that truth, that model that they represent. And I often say, be aware that all the great masters who have ever lived are simultaneous to you in this moment, in the subtle dimensions of consciousness
yes.
that you are. So if you are aware, all those masters, all those great beings, all those sages are surrounding you in this moment and cheering you on.
Mm.
They want you to have the same truthful experience that they had,
yes.
that they modeled. And they are as available to you as your own breath, if you will open to it.
Yes, yes. Well, listen, I feel honored to be one of the first hosts to present your book on the radio here, on internet radio as well. Your book will be coming out. It's not out yet. But I want to help listeners know where they can get it, how they can get a hold of it, and how they can get in touch with you, Master Charles.
Very good. The book, Forgiving the Unforgivable, will come out. It'll launch on February the 21st. Of 2012.
Mm-hmm.
You can learn about it at its website, www.forgivingtheunforgivable.com.
Yeah.
You can also find out more about me through the website of Synchronicity Foundation for Modern Spirituality, which is www.synchronicity.org.
Great. And for your information, everybody, this will be available for download, the interview, today. So you can, of course, listen. And if there are a lot of concepts that you would like to revisit, you can, of course, download the show tomorrow. It will be available or replay in any form you'd like. Also, I'm available on iTunes. Every doggone show is for free. So if you have your podcast ready to go, you can listen as well. Listen, Master Charles Cannon, it has been a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much for sharing your time and information with my listeners. It's been great.
You're most welcome, and thank you, Dr. Michelle. You're just a consummate host, and I'm very grateful for your sharing of this experience with me.
Wow, thank you. Me too. I'm honored. By the way, the book is called Forgiving the Unforgivable, The Power of Holistic Living, The True Story of How the Survivors of the 2008 Mumbai Terrorist Attack Answered Hatred with Compassion and Forgiveness. Learn about Master Cannon's modern spiritual teachings, Synchronicity Foundation for Modern Spirituality, and again, all the contact information for him and how to get his book will be up on the air for tomorrow. All right, thank you so much, and have a beautiful day.
Thank you so much, and all blessings upon you.
Oh, thank you so much. Bye-bye now. All right, this is Dr. Michelle, and listen, thanks for being here with me. As I always say at the end of the show, we're running out of time, so I have to scoot. Do take care of yourself first, because then you'll be great for others, and that's the way it always works. Talk to you next Friday at 11. We have another great author coming up talking about how to make your life better and most successful.